No, my cat found one of his little jangly balls. He was sitting across
this is
the room.
This is a no jangly ball zone.
It's her pelts.
The saga continues. Wu-Tang! Wu-Tang!
Olympic torch flaming. We burn so sweet. The thrill of victory. The agony defeat. We crush slow. Flaming deluxe slow. Poor. Judgment day cometh. Conquer. It's war. Allow us to escape hell. Globe spinning bomb. Pocket full of shells out the sky. Golden arms. Tune spit the shitty Mortal Kombat sound. The fake ball step make the blood stain the ground.
Welcome to the Mediocre Movie Cast, Game of Thrones edition, in which we at the Mediocre Movie Club assemble in a large group, larger than usual this week, and discuss the most recent episode of Game of Thrones, in this case, episode 52, entitled Home. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Bobby.
Hello.
Shane.
Yo.
Blair.
Hello.
Riley.
Hi.
And back with us for the first time in... since the Lego movie? Since Ferris Bueller, maybe?
Ferris Bueller.
Since we were still doing movie podcasts at the Mediocre Movie Club, we have with us tonight Phil Krohn.
Excelsior! Can I make that my catchphrase?
Right, just really
yeah!
And this will be the last time we have him with us. For the immediate future.
Blew it.
So, second episode of Game of Thrones for this season. Quick thoughts, everybody. Generally positive, again, I would imagine.
I would say it took my breath away.
Aw, oh, shit.
Sing.
Yeah,
I thought it was pretty good. It was better than last week, certainly. That might have been because a certain area of the world was neglected. And I'm not talking about Daenerys. Yeah. Another... premiere episode, things are still lining up, things are still going off in a direction, things are certainly happening.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot more, it was still more table setting, for sure, but it cleared out a lot of the trash, i.e. old kings.
How dare you speak about Fat Walder that way?
Is Walder Frey the only original ruler still alive at this point?
I gotta think he's like the oldest lord, and
but if you go back to episode one and just who was ruling each area at that time, he's the only one left, right?
I think that's probably true.
Peter Baelish,
he wasn't a ruler though.
He wasn't a ruler.
No. He was a lord of the fingers.
He got his lordship later.
But even still, like Walder Frey's been in the big chair for longer. So yeah, he's kicking butt.
So I would say he's won the Game of Thrones thing. Congratulations.
All right, let's wrap the series up.
Game's over.
We'll see you next week for Deadwood. More Deadwood.
Maybe talk about Silicon Valley?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, before we get into this Game of Thrones episode, I think we should talk about who won the weekend as far as this epic, historic HBO lineup of Game of Thrones, Silicon Valley, and Veep. I absolutely think Silicon Valley won, 100%.
Oh, between Veep and I didn't watch Veep, but...
Okay. Oh, yeah, with, what's his name? Stephen Tobolowsky?
Yes, yes.
The conjoined triangles. you just said the company, it was Google. I did. I messed that up.
Yeah, and I mean, it brought us Jell-O in a watermelon rind.
Yes.
Clear away.
Between Game of Thrones and Silicon Valley, I think the best thing I've so far, the four episodes combined, is Rigby.
Rigby.
Sure, yeah.
Rigby. Silicon Valley's won 2 weeks in a row, by the way.
But no, I think
I think Thrones won this week.
Yeah, I think Veep was better than Silicon Valley last week.
Ooh.
But I think that flipped this week.
Yeah. Game of Thrones is 0-2 in my book. But
no.
Things are still building. We're still in premiere mode. So that very well might shift in the coming weeks.
Friggin' better.
But we're gonna focus on Game of Thrones here, and we'll do our best to, sidebars notwithstanding. And we're gonna
start now.
Exactly. And we're gonna start our tour of the world this week at the Wall. That's where, for the second week in a row, the big stuff has happened. Important thing to say is that Jon Snow is back to life, shocking exactly no one. I don't remember who guessed that it would be episode 2 in our
Sean Riley.
Was it Riley?
You're darn tootin' it.
All right, you win nothing.
I thought I had episode 2.
I thought you did too.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was Blair, actually, but I'll defer, because I certainly haven't listened to that episode again.
That's right. None of us have.
Yeah. Right.
I listened to it this morning.
Oh.
Okay, then. Tell us.
All right, we'll trust you.
Okay. I don't remember. I was in that
situation.
I was not told there would be a test.
John comes back at the end of the episode, but prior to his resurrection... We're picking up exactly where the previous episode ended. A very little amount of time has gone by at the Wall so far this season. It's pretty much just been a day, with Alistair Thorne and the rest of the Night's Watch ready to barge in and kill Davos and take John's body and kill the other nameless Night's Watch people in there. But everyone's favorite giant 1-1 smashes through the gates and the wildlings take control of the Night's Watch. And now safe... For the time being, Davos can discuss with Melisandre the possibility of resurrecting Jon, and she does exactly that. She gives him a sweet haircut, trims the beard up a little bit, and he takes a big, deep breath. So, in reading some articles about this on the internet today, good thing, bad thing, best of a bad scenario, like this, his death fooled exactly nobody. So I guess they got this taken care of as soon as they possibly could.
It would have been wildly annoying had they dragged it out any more than 2-3 episodes, because it was one of the worst kept secrets on Earth.
Sure.
So, thank God they just got it over with and we can move on with what's actually going to happen this year. If they would have dragged that out the entire season, it would have been a lost season.
If they wanted to keep it a secret or like make you think that he was going to stay dead, they should have done it in like episode 6 of 10 and then left him dead the whole season. Not ended on the cliffhanger of him dying.
Okay, and I read another suggestion today that they should have put off the mutiny until the season premiere, and then let that sit for a little bit. So instead of everyone, like all the viewers, mulling over how he's going to come back and the deep implausibility of that scenario, they would just have a week instead of 9 months.
All right, so we didn't have to read stories all winter and summer about how, hey, where's Kit Harington today in the world?
Yes, exactly. Just that whole nonsense about how long is his hair today and all that stuff.
Hey, but he's dating Rose Leslie from real life now, so.
He is. Good for
him. And Ashley would have kept us updated on the hair situation anyway, so.
Yeah. I'm sure this was one of MMC member Ashley's favorite episodes. If only for that, like... parallel camera view of John's nearly naked body.
Oh, God.
With all the requisite bulges.
So, I got a question. So, is everyone in agreement that Melisandre is the one who brought him back, or is anyone doubting that? Because that's where I am.
What do you got? What would the alternative be?
I mean... Ghost went and nuzzled up to him right there at the last second, and there's also the Night's King situation.
Oh, so you think there's a possibility that he's like a double agent?
I think if it was the Night's King, we would have seen blue eyes when he came up, right? Don't they all have that at least tint of blue when they first come back?
I don't know. No, I definitely don't think he's coming back like
a White Walker
type, one of those zombies, but obviously that guy's magic powers. There might be something with John with that, and there's been speculation with that in the past that John could be joining up with these dudes.
I guess I would have expected a hint if there was something there, because even when he turned the live baby into one of his own, the eyes turned blue. There's always been some kind of correlation, I guess. And Ghost, did he nuzzle up or just kind of look at him?
He woke up, and then John woke up.
Right. Yes.
So are you thinking he like warped?
I think that's a possibility. Yeah.
I think if that happened, we will figure out soon enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did anybody? Well, I think you're a big jerk then, Phil.
Anybody else watch After the Thrones?
No.
Like the Greenwald show?
Yeah. Today they suggested that Beric Dondarrion and Theros Amir, that their secret of his revival wasn't that he was a great priest, it was that. He was mourning over his friend, and they were suggesting that possibly you know, all of Melisandre's show and, you know, speaking in whatever language that was of the Lord of Light was nothing. But really, when she kind of submitted and, you know, whispered please, is when you know, the real magic happened.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. And we had Bobby last week who had a pretty good theory about how that kind of resurrection power is only visited upon those who are doubting in their faith. And I think, like, with Melisandre's disheveled hair, in her sexy version, I think that's like as close as we're gonna get to seeing frazzled Melisandre when she's got that glamour on.
Okay, I'm not sure I would say doubting in her faith, but like totally vulnerable, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
And who is Melisandre?
Me.
Oh, Blair. See, did you gain points this week for her look?
I think I got...
No. You get 25 status points.
For status, though.
All right.
Did the scene itself like work on you guys? Did you think that...
I guess I expected a little more... I don't know if I get drama, maybe, is the right word.
But a little pomp and circumstance?
Something, yeah. I don't know. I guess I just supposed to be a little more different. But I think since everyone knew it was coming, there was no reason for him to do much more and just
they
to
did,
get through it.
They did at least make it as tense as a horribly kept secret could be made. Because, you know, everyone leaves and it's like, oh, crap, maybe they did just bring him in on a lark just to do these two scenes laying in a bed and pay him millions of dollars to do it just to screw with everyone. But...
That would be some season one stuff right there.
Yeah, it really would. But
well, I guess I would have liked to see them make, I don't know, like Melisandre have to take off the necklace and reveal herself or something. It just feels now that her revealing herself was just more of a shock to viewers than a crucial plot point. So I guess like when she was struggling, she kind of, I would, even if just to see her strip down again, not strip down, but take the necklace off of
Please, no. Self
to kind of, reveal that humility again before it worked.
Jesus, needs some more material,
that,
man.
I think,
well, you know, Bobby moved to Arizona recently, so that's all he's looking for.
That's right.
I think old Melisandre was strictly like a character moment, and I don't think we're ever going to see that again. I think that was just for the viewers being able to just know more about her character specifically. And
you really don't think that's going to swing back at some point?
I don't.
No,
way. I don't.
Yeah.
I hope it does.
I think it's interesting that we know more about her now, and that's as much as there needs to be.
I think that it has shown that she's broken, right? And
probably
and
not going forward now that she's possibly back from the dead. But yeah, from that period of time, yeah, it was very effective characterization in my mind.
Okay, but I still think the scene ends with everyone disappointed in her. Like, everyone's like, ugh, you didn't do it. And even she's disappointed in herself, and no one knows yet that he's alive. So when he comes out, I still think people are going to be like, oh, shit, okay. And she might even be like, wow, did I do that? Like, I don't know.
Do you think Davos is disappointed in her? Because Davos never really seemed to believe. He just kind of said, this is our last ditch effort and kind of hope. But I never felt like he was disappointed that it didn't work because of her.
Okay,
just
yeah,
disappointed
that's
in general, I guess. I mean, Tormund was just like, this bitch can't do anything. So he was
pissed
off at her situation. But
Davos was throwing the Hail Mary, and Melisandre, I think you're right, though, that even when he's back and she's going to still be questioning her faith quite a bit, like, not necessarily, you know, what to believe, but more so, are the visions that I've had, you know, how does this, you know, relate to that?
And if she has power, it's in her weakness, kind of, in her state of, you know, brokenness, I guess.
I think this is going to, like, from what we're going to see from Melisandre going forward is whole hog, more passionate and more sure of herself than she's ever been. I think she's going to realize that it was never Stannis she was seeing. It was always John. She just misinterpreted, but now she's certain. Because this is like this, and this is book knowledge, but it's going to fit into her Azor Ahai, rise from the dead type of stuff as well. And if that never comes up in the show, that's okay. She still brought someone back from the dead that she's been seeing in the flames.
There's a lot of book theory that her being this old and that reveal in the show is going to lead back to the book showing her age and, I guess, her fragility. So when she brings John back, that it's going to kill her is a big theory that I've seen for the book. So obviously it's not going to happen in the show.
But does that happen to Thoros in here? Like, does he get more?
He seems fine.
Okay.
After doing it's the person that he resurrects that didn't has the problem.
Okay, so yeah, well, no, didn't he say? Yeah, I guess whoever passes it on is the one who has the issue. So, like, when Beric passes it on, you know, to Catelyn, he dies, right?
Yes.
That's how it works for that. But I thought it was Thoros said every time he does it, like every time he brought Beric back, it was harder on him.
On Beric.
No. On Thoros, I thought he said. But, I mean, I could be wrong.
Yeah, it's harder on Beric. It's harder on Beric to keep dying and coming back. It there seems to be no issue with Thoros.
Thoros just seemed like he was tired and drunk.
Yeah. He was, pretty much. And he admits that, too. So,
we're speculating a whole lot. I think, like, based on the scene plays out exactly as demonstrated, and we'll find out how people are going to react to it in the future. I think it worked. I think they knocked it out quickly, and now we can move on. We can put season 5 in the rear view as far as all this is concerned, and Ollie and Thorin are in jail now, and we'll see what happens to them.
That little shit lost me points.
Why do you lose you points?
He lost 15 for status because he got locked up.
Oh.
I mean, yeah, reasonable.
No, he does. I don't know why I picked him. I hate him.
The alternative could have been 1-1 picking him up and smashing him into the wall.
That would have been fantastic.
That would have been okay.
It was it's my favorite kill of the obviously two episodes so far. It was wonderful. And it would have been great if it was Ollie, but oh well.
Child murder. Anyway.
staying in this regional world, we're going to go north of the wall next to Bran. He's back after a long time on the bench. He's having a flashback, a Raven-aided flashback to watching his dad and uncle and aunt in a thriving Winterfell long before his birth, and they're playing, and everything's idyllic and nice, and there's people in the courtyard, and then he wakes up a little disappointed. But he does also learn that Hodor's real name is Willis, most importantly, I think.
Something happened there.
This, like, I don't know what it is about this whole area of the world, but this was like the big emotional moment of the episode for me when Bran just learns more about this person that's been helping him out for so long. But it doesn't actually change how they're able to communicate to each other. I got a little misty there. And then we go on. Mira's outside, a little frustrated that she's been stuck in this cave for presumably months. But a child of the forest tells her that, hey, don't worry about it. You're not going to be here forever. So that can be our next bet. How long is Bran going to stay in this place?
God, I hope it's not much longer. I'm so bored with the Bran storyline already.
Really?
You got to see
Little Ned and Little Benjen.
I mean, okay, that was fine, whatever. But that's a storyline that needs to start paying off at some point. That's one that's been going on since what? When did he start this little journey? The beginning of season 2 or end of season 1?
End of season 3 or beginning of season 3?
Oh shit! Really?
Yeah.
God, I can't keep track of Bran, and he just. His whole storyline bugs me. I just want it to pay off in some way, shape, or form.
I think it's going to pay off pretty largely. I think he's going to be one of the more important characters when it all comes together.
That's what everyone says.
I think
maybe that's a part of why it's slow, you know, to get you a little frustrated with it and kind of hit you with something bigger later, hopefully.
Yeah. I think we'll see visions of increasing importance, and then something will happen that'll drive them out.
Do you think we'll see the future?
I don't know.
Kissel's not a fan of the future.
No,
Kissel doesn't like the future?
I'm not a prophecy guy.
You live in the moment?
Oh, yeah, that's me. The moment and the far, far away past.
Now, okay, I want to, at this point, we talked about whether Bran would be moving or not, so I thought it was interesting that he got to come out of the cave, and I wonder if that's kind of a setup, because I think in the books, we're going to see him pretty much planted and stay in one spot, and everything we see from him is going to be through the eyes of the trees. And here he got to move, so I wonder if we're going to actually get to see him move around, especially with Mira's, you know, anxious nature wanting to get out of there as well.
I think they absolutely leave this area.
Yeah. The Children of the Forest girl, cat-looking woman, actually says that they're not going to be there forever.
Yeah. I think Bran's going to spend X amount of time training here, and then he'll go off to do whatever.
Also, I wondered, we saw in Winterfell, and what seems to be a difference is that we can only see in visions from Greenseer what the trees can see. So I think that was a little bit of a divergence, too, is that we can actually see in the city where there is no hearth trees.
Yeah, they're definitely cheating in the show, where he can just generally see in the past.
Which is fine. It makes for more interesting visuals in TV. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, putting limits on whatever he can see as long as a heart tree is around. I don't know, that'd be okay. They're just cutting corners in the show, which is something they do a lot. This isn't as annoying as some other corners they cut. I'm okay with it.
Specifically as far as his vision, I thought it was a very nice bit of storytelling that what he saw was a nice mirror image to season one of him and his brothers training in the courtyard.
Absolutely.
Do we think the vision of Lyanna here sets up what's coming in another vision soon?
We know from the previews that the next episode is going to be some kind of big sword fight between an adult Ned and some Kingsguard people. So I think that's going to continue to fill in some backstory and make some things that had been underlined. It's going to bold the underline a little bit going forward. So we'll see on that one, too. Moving back south of the wall to Winterfell. We're all Ramsay all the time here.
80 points.
Yeah, that son of a bitch got a lot of points.
Somehow Baby Killing isn't the lead.
Him and his father, Roose, are discussing what to do next now that they've lost Sansa. Ramsay's pretty sure they're going to the wall. He suggests attacking the wall and killing Jon. And, well, he wants to kill Jon because he's potentially a Stark, and the North can rally around a Stark. Roose says this is a stupid idea, and then a maester comes in and says that Fat Walda has given birth to a boy. Ramsay hugs his father, stabs him in the heart, and then he feeds his stepmother and half-brother to his dogs in a very long and drawn-out scene.
And somehow feeding a baby to a dog is not the weirdest thing that happened in this episode, or the lead in general.
Yeah. So if there's anything that Ramsay needed, it was more power. So we can look forward to that for the next. Well, he's the undisputed master of the North. I'm sure that'll be a delight to wallow in for the next several episodes.
And I guess this makes him our fourth Warden of the North since we started the series. So that's impressive. Is he just way too much of a cartoon at this point?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Kissel absolutely hates him.
I can't stand it. I can't. He doesn't add anything to the show. He's just a huge...
He's a completely irredeemable cartoon. I mean... Yeah,
I think they've gone too far with how much they like to put him on screen and everything they give him. I think
and everything's on camera. Everything's on camera. Nothing's implied. The scene with him and Walda and the baby, it's obvious to everybody but Walda what's going to happen as soon as he walks in that kennel, but they have to show the whole scene. They have to add all the sound effects. That's just not for anyone.
So, big foreshadowing with Roose saying someone's going to take you out back and feed you to dogs. Just like he's been doing. So we're going to get a big, satisfying death, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's the only thing that Ramsay is good for at this point, is just to serve up a big, cheering moment of catharsis to the viewers. But in the meantime, we have to continue to watch him being one-dimensionally terrible. Killing his dad, I like that actor, Michael McElhattan, I think is what his name was.
Still is. He's not really dead.
Sure. He's gone from the show. I've never seen him in anything else, so.
Once you get killed in Game of Thrones, they just kill
That's
you in
it.
Real
You're
life.
Dead in real life.
You have not seen Sean Bean since 2011.
There's a dead baby in a Northern Ireland lodge somewhere.
Pieces of a dead baby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there are no special effects necessary there. That's just how Game of Thrones is rolling these days. They have that much money. I like that he was killed, but I think thematically, and I think it works with the show, that he's killed by his son. He's loosed this evil onto the world and ended up consuming him. So I'm sad to see that character go, but just because he as a villain, he's just as villainous as Ramsay, but his is more cerebral and sadistic from a distance.
Right, I think that's the big difference, is he always planned and plotted everything out. Ramsay kind of reacts, and that's probably hopefully what gets him in the end soon. But there's a pretty
Ramsay
staunch difference between the two.
Yeah, Ramsay's apparently a master planner now.
Yes, he's like we've been saying, he's awesome at everything. He's got the best plans, and he's got friends of the Karstarks, even though, as far as we know, he's never had a conversation with a Karstark before. I mean, and speaking of that, like, why are the Boltons in charge at this point? Why not the Karstarks? At least the Karstarks have Stark blood in them. Why are they bowing down to this crazy person who will kill his own father, much less a makeshift ally? Like, why would the Karstarks think they can trust this guy? Just the dynamics of the North make no sense to me. It's just what's easiest and what is most shocking and visceral is what they're going for here.
Well, they just might not be as strong.
I don't know.
It could be obvious that they can't beat them.
The Karstarks are very loyal to the Starks because they're both of the First Men and, you know, had the same blood running through their veins or whatever. But once that whole thing fell out, you would have thought the Karstarks would have had a little more, I don't know, or at least try to have a little more power, especially once Tywin went down, who, you know, named Bruce the Warden of the North. Once he went down, I guess there's no reason for them to stay loyal.
Yeah, and that alliance between the Lannisters and the Boltons is done.
Right.
And the Karstarks, the original Karstark was a Stark relative.
But so, also, if that's the strongest or most high-ranking Karstark left, the one who was there with Ramsay and Roose, I guess maybe there just isn't much to him besides a large army, but not much leadership.
Yeah, but then all the leadership is in the Bolton house, where fathers are murdered and
right.
babies of those fathers are fed to dogs.
Boltons are still Team Lannister at this point. So
no, they're not.
No, they're plotting against Lannister.
Well, I know they're plotting against it, but I guess officially they're still Team Lannister, right?
Right. They were planted by Lannister there, so I guess under the big giant scheme of things, they'd be in that tree, the Lannister.
But when Sansa married into their family, that was over. And that was all agreed upon by all the Boltons. So they're not friends anymore.
Okay.
So if that's where their power comes from, I still don't understand why anyone would bow down to the Boltons. I don't know. Ramsay mentions that they need to rally the Karstarks and the Umbers and the Manderlys themselves. It seems like the Umbers are going to show up in the next episode, and we may still get some Manderlys who are really great in the books, but haven't really shown up besides a non-speaking cameo in the show. So we might get to
maybe.
See those.
Maybe. Do we want to throw out some guesses?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So maybe the Umbers are going to show up next episode, and Sansa will have gone there, and they're just going to beat the Boltons. And kill Ramsay. Be pretty sweet.
That would be sweet. At this point, I don't need a fancy death for Ramsay. I'll take him tripping off of a battlement or whatever. I just want this character out of the show. He doesn't make the show better. He makes the show worse. I miss Joffrey.
Yeah. Have y'all thought things this season have just happened this person has come, Brienne shows up right in the nick of time, and
mm-hmm.
I mean I don't I've tried to think to myself, like, well, could it have happened any other way? Like, okay, so the wildlings show up just as they're about to, you know, bust down the door.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels too...
It's cute.
It's too cute for Game of Thrones. Like, it's
games of Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah. And they're paring the cast down. Like, we saw some Martells go last week. Some big-time Martells go last week. And we saw some big-time Boltons go this week. So I feel like whether or not those actions make sense, it's good for the show in general.
Right.
Because as far as like, the producers and the writers are concerned, because there's less characters to give a shit about.
Yeah,
right. It's all going to be shrinking to close in on the
end. And in a lot of these cases, the shrinking is not organic to the world. Because in both of these cases, Martells and Boltons, it's people killing their superiors. Not just their superiors, but like their family members.
Right.
And it doesn't seem like the world can really work if that's seen as a viable way for promotion. But on the other hand, I've always thought of Game of Thrones, like the broad arc of it, in the beginning, the world as it's set up is broken and disgusting and needs to be torn down. And this is just the way that it is being torn down, is everyone's revolting against this system in ways both selfish and altruistic. And those two impulses will ultimately result in this dumb system of genetic monarchy being tossed under the wayside.
Right, and even though, you know, they're getting rid of characters and, you know, paring things down, This is a smooth transition, guys. Get ready.
Mm.
We go to the Iron Islands, where they add some guy who I have no freaking clue who he is. Someone tell me who this guy is.
That's the cook from the movie.
Yes. He escaped from the pirates, and then he went back in time about 500 years to an alternate dimension where there are dragons.
Oh, that's and became a super pirate.
Yeah, he's the chef.
He's the chef from...
From a hijacking.
From
a
hijacking. Well,
former...
He's
Mediocrity's Best Actor nominee, Pilo Asbeck, has joined the show as Euron Greyjoy, Balon Greyjoy's brother.
Well, can I pick him in the Fantasy League?
No, because he's mine, Phil.
He should have gotten 100 more points for killing a king, the last of the five kings.
Yeah, surprised they didn't give that to you. Sorry there, Kissel.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
I guess technically the ground killed him, I suppose, and no one picked the ground. So those are points that are just gone.
That's a sneaky pickup right there.
That is a sneaky pick.
Yeah, Euron got 10 points for wits, too. Nice.
Yeah, he is the dragon
god. Called himself the storm and the drowned god.
Is that what the wits are for?
I don't know.
Yeah, he said, I am the drowned god.
Okay, so before you get into it, the Salt Throne, that just, I don't like the name one bit.
It's the Sea Stone Chair.
Correct.
In the books, right? The Salt Throne doesn't sound quite as evocative.
No.
Speaking of, I bought some sea salt beef jerky today, and it was sweet.
How's that?
It was awful.
It was sweet.
Like, it was sweet. It was bizarre.
That's terrible.
Oh, is this where the you don't like sweet meat conversation was earlier?
Yeah, I'm just not a big sweet meats fan.
Oh, you're not a teriyaki fan?
It's okay. It's just like, I just don't get into it too much.
Was this from the market?
No, this is okay. Well, it's from a market called BP.
The market has not let them down yet.
They
fresh...
sell oil and beef jerky.
It's very fresh stuff. You know it was packaged on site because it had a little package in there. It said, "Don't eat this."
There are many lawsuits from people that shopped at BP that ate the desiccant. A constant concern. But our concerns are more Iron Man based at the moment, because in this area of the world, we're getting some coups, some secret coups, and some secret assassinations where Euron Greyjoy shows up and tosses his older brother, King Balon Greyjoy, off of a bridge. And while Yara Greyjoy, rejoining the show after another long interval away from it, while she was supposed to be the heir, that would be a first for the Ironborn. They never had a female leader before. So instead of just accepting that, they are going to vote on it instead. So
democracy.
Democracy amongst a bunch of raping, murdering pirates. So
isn't that what they would have done had it been a guy, too, though? Like they acted like that was their way. Is
it used to be like I guess in the books and the whole background story, it used to be their way a long, long, long time ago, and hasn't been done for generations now. But
I don't have a quibble with the show in this.
No, it's fine. I do because it's been said throughout the seasons that Theon was supposed to be the heir at one point, and if you're going to name an heir, that means there is no King's Moot; it just passes on. So
okay, so it's just insulting to her. That right. I can.
Yes, I think the Iron Men want to say because this is not something they've ever done before.
But it's just this random guy in the sea who says it. It didn't seem like it was a collaborative effort here. But
sure. Yeah.
In the show, he just says this is how we do it every time. Basically, there's no questioning the King's Moot. When if Theon was still viable, there wouldn't have been a King's Moot. So it seems like a conflict there.
Yes.
And it seems like a convenient step for the show.
Yeah.
So another corner cut, but that's fine.
Well, he's on his way, viable or not. He's on his way.
He is.
Yes, Theon is going. We didn't mention that in the Winterfell section, but yeah, Theon and Sansa split up. Theon's going to go back to the Iron Islands. If they're not happy with a woman, they're probably not going to be happy with castrated, tortured, mentally disturbed male heir either. But who knows? Maybe he'll get some secret vote.
There's fewer choices in this King's Moot, as far as we know, than the books. Because we're missing Aaron Dampier and Victarion.
Victarion. So. Yeah, it seems like Victarion and Euron are the same person.
Do y'all think that he's actually going to run? I don't think so.
Ooh. Euron?
No.
Theon?
Theon. No. I think he's just going to go back home.
Yeah. Theon, he's just gonna go going to go and reunite with his sister.
Yeah.
I can see him making some campaign buttons. Running for himself, vote for me, and you can finger bang all your sisters.
I was just going to ask if you thought the reuniting was going to be anywhere similar to their first meeting.
It's going to get to it, Riley.
Euron's going to shave his beard, put his hair up, see what happens. Introduction of Euron, I thought that was fine. Cool new character.
Yeah.
He's no Sand Snake.
I think he practices English by watching Desmond Hume on Lost.
Okay.
John, do you get that joke?
No. I do not. That's something for all the Lost listeners.
That's all right, brother. There's a really, really probably obnoxious point in like circa 2010 where every single Lost fan called everyone brother because of this really cool Scottish character named Ian or Desmond Hume.
Sounds awful.
Me and Desmond is on my fantasy team. If we can talk about that too, if you want, Kissel. It's baseball.
What? We've gotten enough things that I could not be less interested in the last couple minutes or so.
Would you rather listen to fantasy baseball talk save that for or later. Hot beef jerky talk?
Beef jerky talk. Beef jerky like applies to my life a little bit at least. Beef jerky occasionally.
There's a chance you'll run across beef jerky over baseball.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. That's a very solid supposition.
Noted.
That'll take us to King's Landing next. We've got a storyteller who is also a weenie wagger during Cersei's Walk of Shame, telling the local drunks about how awesome he was to show his dick to the queen, and his reward is to get his face shoved into the wall by Robert Strong, who just apparently hangs out at bars waiting for people to talk shit about Cersei.
Right.
And murdering them. Whatever. Here nor there.
Right.
It seemed like a very unnecessary way just to tell us that Robert the Strong is, you know, Cersei's protector, lacks whatever. We already knew that. It just seemed unnecessary. Like, I don't know. Didn't need that.
Yeah. And that guy seemed like a good storyteller. A shame that we're never going to hear from him again.
Well, with Theon's member gone, we've been dangerously low on dick jokes. Last couple seasons.
We can only count on Tyrion and Varys so much for dick jokes. Cersei is she wants to go visit Myrcella during her wake, but Tommen has given an order that she's not to leave the Red Keep. There's almost a standoff almost violence between Robert Strong and a squadron of Lannister guards. Who knows who would have won there? Probably Robert Strong. But she walks away. She doesn't force the issue. And then we go to the Sept itself, where Marcella's lying in state, and Tommen is upset with himself for allowing all this terrible stuff to happen to Cersei. He goes back to talk to her, asks him to help him. He knows that he's been weak, and they reconcile. And she's going to be in his corner again. And back in the Sept, Jaime and the High Sparrow have a little standoff as well that also leads to no result. They're really pushing the underdog nature of the Lannisters in these first two episodes. This is another instance where they're going to eventually reward the viewer with some pious violence, some pious massacres of the Sparrows, who honestly have it coming.
Seems reasonable.
Yes, but it's just the people that are going to be unleashing this violence upon them are going to be Cersei and her Frankenstein monster. So it's conflicted there a little bit. Like, I don't want Robert Strong to be around for a long time either.
Well, it's going to be really hard for him to start killing him unless they start making dick jokes.
Yeah. That's his like his keyword. Whenever
he's got to be around for a while till we get to Clegane Bowl.
Sure. Yeah. We'll see. Still no sympathy for Cersei in our group. Generally, we didn't really have any last weekend.
Yeah,
I think I'm probably the most sympathetic.
The Settlers did. Yeah, the Settlers did a little bit.
I'm like halfway there.
I mean, I think that Lena Headey, or however you say her name,
Headey.
Great. She's so phenomenal and plays that character so well that if we're just watching the show, she sold me. The books, you have very little.
Yeah, she's so much worse in the books.
Oh yeah, she's horrible.
I will say she had a well earned glass of wine going.
I noticed that too, and thought, well, she's back on that
train. Well, and she had a bath, and her hair looked so much nicer this week.
Yeah,
she's rocking the pixie cut. It's a good look.
Yeah,
if that's what that's called, I don't know. I don't know what I don't know if you even give your haircut a name when it's done by angry nuns bearing blunt shears.
Well, as our Catholic school representative Kissel and Sean, any experience?
And Phil, too. There was lots of talk of shame, certainly, but never as blatant. I mean, walking naked Catholic students through the hall might have happened in the off hours, but not during school, if you know what I mean.
I couldn't grow facial hair in high school, but I know that there were some guys that had to dry shave with disposable razors when they tried to grow goatee. So that's as close as we got.
Just, yeah, quality people. Something isn't gonna stir in our like primal animal brains when we see these humorless religious people get theirs in a few episodes, I'm sure.
Has anyone mentioned yet that High Sparrow is the Bernie Sanders of Game of Thrones, talking about how the people are gonna take over anyway?
I mentioned it on Facebook today, I think.
Ah, damn.
Yes.
Phil plagiarizing.
Actually, I stole that from my brother first.
I'm sure
Phil
he's
plagiarizing
just
from his family.
Googled it. Damn right.
There's way too much Game of Thrones talk in the internet for anyone to ever have an original thought about it.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, I do like that the High Sparrow talks about how pissed off the average person is against the people on top, justifiably so. But then those people in the show are represented by fanatics who have branded their foreheads. So it's hard to really have sympathy for them. Like, this is something that the fourth and the fifth book does really well, is emphasize how all these stupid games that the nobility are playing are impacting just the average person. And that's something the show is losing or has lost. I don't know, maybe it'll come back. Or maybe we'll emphasize that a little
more.
You
can't go around making dick jokes anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You can't even have a good laugh about the time you showed your dick to the queen. You'll get your face slammed into a wall.
Your head will explode.
By a hulking zombie who's fooling nobody. When you look at his helmet, right. Like his skin is purple.
It's blue. Oh, gosh.
I will say, no sympathy for Cersei or whatever, but going to Tommen, I think I liked the way that he kind of figured it was Cersei who had Trystane killed, because that's like the first real decision and kingly thing he did on his own, even though he was wrong about it, obviously. But I think it was at least nice to see him doing a little, having a little initiative to make that call. And in most cases, he would have been right about his mother. He just had me wrong there.
Yeah, exactly.
But yes, now I'm going to bring up, Sean posted something saying, you know, the note that Dorne read in Dorne before he got killed, mm-hmm. supposedly told us how Trystane got over there with the Sand Snakes.
Yeah, Jaime put him back on the boat immediately.
Right, so then they would have been near Dorne. So then my question now, then, if that's true, how does Tommen...
Bobby, before you go on, for those of us who, and for our possibly fives, tens, singles of listeners...
Hundreds, thousands.
what did that note say?
It basically said, and it was from Jaime Lannister, basically said that Myrcella was poisoned on the boat, and my sister would have him killed, so I'm sending him back on the same boat, so he'll be safe there. And that was about it.
Wait, that happened in the show this week?
No. No.
That was like in a behind-the-scenes featurette or something that HBO decided to put online.
Because they got so much yesterday. Flack, probably?
Right, because everyone thought it was a big hole in the story. So, but even with that, how does Tommen now know that Trystane is dead already? There's no way he knows if that's going on back at Dorne. So either way, there's a big hole in it.
Yeah, it's always hard to know how much time is passing in the show, I think.
Well, it couldn't have been long, because Myrcella is still...
Right.
Yeah, a few days at most, I would
say. Yeah, because even if Trystane does... If there's enough time for it to be known that Trystane is dead, the Sand Snakes aren't going to send a raven over to say, hey, yeah, we killed our brother.
There's nobody in Dorne who's going to send something back.
They're so dumb. And really, like...
Look at how awesome we are. We just killed everyone in charge of Dorne.
They're the ones who sent, the Myrcella's, or Myrcella's, God, not very good at names, necklace
the Viper necklace.
Snake. Like, they just think that they're amazing, and so it would be just like them to send ravens. How fast do ravens fly?
I don't know if they really fly across the sea, though. The narrow
sea. Who knows?
How fast do ravens...
We don't really want to know that.
Google that.
And yeah, knowing
but how far away is Dorne from...
They added like a postscript. Hey, I also called my sister a greedy bitch. That was pretty funny, huh?
Exactly.
Apparently, speeds up to 58.7 miles per hour have been observed in top racers for short distances.
Well, we know
Dorne. Their average flying speed over moderate distances, about 500 miles, is around 50 miles per hour.
Okay.
So
there you go.
So how far away is King's Landing from Dorne?
Across the entire Narrow Sea. No.
It's not that far.
Well,
yeah, it is.
Yeah, the Narrow Sea is not the Atlantic Ocean, though. It's like Lake Michigan, right?
Well, it's narrow, that's for sure.
The point is, this Dorne bullshit...
It's still bullshit.
Even with the extra textual stuff the show is trying to add to it to paper over the general shittiness of that area of the world.
Good effort, it didn't work.
Yeah. Back across the Narrow Sea, since we were talking about it, in Braavos, Arya's getting beaten more, but Jaqen shows up to ask her a bunch of questions. You can... get your sight back, you can get fed, you can sleep under a roof if you just say your name. But she refuses, and she passes the test, she dings, she levels up, and she's able to go back into the House of the Faceless Men.
And she got points for the level up.
She did. So, she's still blind, but she gets to go indoors at least. No more blind begging for Arya. Another thing that was inevitable, but... the show knows that they can't drag... Like with Jon Snow, they know that they can't drag this kind of stuff out forever.
Right. Well, those are the characters that everyone wants to see, so they need to start getting to the action for Arya.
The training can only go on for so long.
Yeah, how many more
times... Any chance they really... Go ahead.
Wave just, how many more times do we really need to see her just get the shit kicked out of her?
Right.
Yeah.
Any chance they go, like, you know, completely another direction and, like, do, like, an 80s hair metal montage for the rest of her training in next episode and we can be done with that?
Speed through. She's getting better and better at cutting people's faces off.
Soundtrack is, like, Eye of the Tiger.
Until at the end, she does it in, like, one swipe and holds it up in, like, a, exactly. in, like, a fist raise type pose. Yeah, I think it'd hurry the plot along, certainly. Wouldn't be the worst thing.
Better than Dorne.
Yeah, better than Dorne.
That would only happen in Dorne, hopefully.
The floor is pretty low as far as shitty areas of the world are concerned in Game of Thrones. Our last location of the week, we don't see Daenerys or Dorne, thankfully. But we do see Tyrion and Varys and that crew in Meereen. Tyrion and Varys learn that it's okay for them to make dick jokes back at each other, but not so much when Grey Worm is in the room. He's not...
Whose cat is attacking them?
That would be my cat.
or is Sean possibly throwing change at his child?
No, my cat found one of his little jangly balls. He was sitting
across
the room.
This is a no jangly ball zone.
It's her pounce.
Sir Pounce.
Sir Pounce has made an appearance. Yes. Oh man, you almost got to hear him attack the other cat, which would have been.
Go ahead and cut this out.
Which means it's staying in.
Please
this is
don't.
Still better than Dorne.
Now it has to stay.
All right, fair enough. We learn that things are back to normal in Astapor and Yunkai, the cities that Daenerys previously captured. They're back to selling slaves. Tyrion realizes that his greatest asset is the dragons, and if he's going to make use of them, they need to be free, because otherwise they're just going to wither into nothing. So he goes into the dragon pit in a quality scene, tense scene. The dragons look great. And he talks to them. He tells them about how he wished for one of them when he was a little kid instead of a little man. And he pulls the chains off of them, and he takes the chain off of Rhaegal, and then Viserion helpfully lowers his neck to get the same done to him. And they all retreat to their corners and think about what just happened.
Well, now they have little catacombs to run about, supposedly.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, they're still locked beneath Meereen, but at least they're not chained up anymore. So I'm sure they won't think about breaking out or anything anytime soon.
Right, but then he gets a line of the night at the very end where if he has another idea like that, to punch him, which that was a great line.
Yeah, Tyrion was dropping some solid quips.
Yeah, it was the second best line to I drink and I know things.
Yeah,
there's already a shirt you can buy. I've seen on Facebook a few links to already.
Game of Thrones on top of the marketing, if nothing else.
It was good to see him drinking again, too.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely, absolutely. So yeah, that, anything to add about Meereen?
I read something today that had the winners and losers of the week, and it had Tyrion's, you know, going down and rescuing the dragons as a loser of the week, acting like his plan failed. I couldn't have disagreed more.
I think that was exactly what his plan was.
I thought, yeah, I'm freeing the dragons, and I survived, and, like, me and them have a rapport now, whether it's believed or not believed. It was a win.
That was his whole setup that he explained, is, like, dragons are more intelligent than we are, so they know people, and now they're going to know me, so this is a win.
Exactly.
There's really no questioning that.
It's just, like, one of, like, entertainment was, like, so there's a shocker that Jon Snow lived. I'm like, it wasn't a shocker, so I imagine it's probably a publication like that.
Huh, well, were they disappointed that, like, they didn't leave the castle?
Or the dragon
I don't something? Know. It was a short little blurb, winners and losers. I think it was from Vox or, like, Verve or one of those B publications.
I mean, even if it didn't go well as it did with the dragons, like, reacting to him and doing what he wants them to do, he still got. I mean, he talks about how much he loves dragons, and he got to see one up close.
Which I was really excited that he finally got to talk about that, and pretty much what he said was taken straight from the books. And so, we know, like, his whole thing is studying and knowing everything about dragons, so it's pretty exciting, I guess, as a fan to see him get that moment.
Yeah. The three riders of the dragons. Come on, John.
Well, that asks another question, then, doesn't it? Because there's theories out there And, you know, we've seen stuff about the tale and whatever else, Tyrion, all these reasons he might be Targaryen. And I've been reading stuff today that have led people to believe this is another clue towards that, because the dragons were so nice to him. And
it's, you know, Tyrion, Jon, and Dany.
As long as Tyrion's not the secret Targaryen, I hate that stuff.
Right. I don't like that theory one bit, but people are saying that this might...
I'd be totally fine with Tyrion riding a dragon at some point.
Sure, absolutely. But
I really don't want him to be a Targaryen.
With the help of Bran warging a dragon would be...
Sure. Or Bran putting his braid into a dragon.
Or there's some horn out there, I believe, that controls dragons. Maybe he gets his hold of that.
I thought you
or just that, like he says, dragons are smarter than people, and they deem that he's worthy to because he's a good person.
Correct. And there's history in Westeros that shows dragons have allowed non-Targaryen riders, so... Possible either way.
We'll have to wait and see, Tyrion. They haven't really done anything with Meereen yet. We don't have a good sense of where this plot is going. It seems kind of it's a little bit in stasis now and left over from last season with the Sons of the Harpy and all that. But they haven't shown themselves. Well, I guess they did burn the boats. That feels like kind of an afterthought. I don't know.
There's the guy creeping around corners last episode that didn't come up at all this time, but we'll see where that goes.
And speaking of not really showing the people suffering and the town suffering and common people suffering, I think it was AV Club pointing out last night, like, if you're a casual viewer, not a book reader, you have no idea all those people are kind of suffering around there and everything is chaos.
Yeah. The city seems like, it seems like it has a bunker mentality based on the scene last week where everyone is just kind of staying in their homes. But other than that, as far as the view is concerned, everything's okay. Things are still functioning, and the action is happening in the throne room and in the dragon basement. But a lot of people live in Meereen, just like a lot of people live in King's Landing and Winterfell and wherever else. But the show is very centered on the people that are in charge, and their comings and goings. But whatever, good episode, I think, for the most part. Still teasing stuff ahead, which I'm generally fine with. Just a little sloppy in certain areas. Probably a B again, just like last week.
I had A minus.
Yeah.
I'm probably in the B range.
Phil, Blair, Riley, care to grade?
B plus.
Yeah, I'll go B plus A minus. I was probably thinking A minus earlier, but we've talked it down a little bit more than I was expecting to.
Yeah, I'm in the B range, B minus B.
The Jon Snow stuff, like, that's the big event of the week, but it's anticlimactic. It was just,
you know what? It gets a bump to B plus because we had an old man sighting.
That's true, we did. But you think old Nan's always right, but what did you say about Hodor? He's never going to fight anybody in his life. He's going to be a stable boy. Well, Hodor has been toting teenagers all across the North for several seasons now, and he's killed people, and he's met the Children of the Forest. So he's had quite a life. So old Nan was full of shit.
Has he killed anybody without being
whatever
taken over by Bran?
Don't parse. Don't...
Hey, man's never wrong. That's all I'm saying.
I'm sure there's been an OD or two at some of DJ Hodor shows.
Yeah, that's probably true. We're just like the blurring of real and well, this is real. What am I talking about?
This is real.
Fantasy talk for this week. Riley, you were the big winner. You had Jon Snow and Ramsay both, right?
Yeah, and it's a shame because, as Bobby pointed out earlier today, that now that Ramsay's Ward of the North, I should have gotten a promotion bonus too. So I'm a little shorted, and I didn't get scored for High Sparrow, but yeah, 135 points. Yeah, and I had the Mountain on the bench, but you know, 130 points for the week still, I'll take it.
Jon Snow probably should have got like a PG-13 or something nudity because all he had was a little cloth over him. But
oh, absolutely,
failed on that one as well.
And he got a haircut.
He did.
I think this is the fun of this game, in that we just kind of...
To congratulate JR for getting out of the negatives and back to even.
I mean, yeah, zero is a number. Just
So what you're saying is he's worked his way up to a zero.
Yes.
Exactly. Oh, nice one.
Whereas Phil hasn't moved from last week, and he may not move again for the rest of the
season. Phil and Brian both got shut out this week.
I really thought Tyrion probably would have had more than 15 on wits. It was a solid Tyrion episode.
He had a lot of lines. Don't eat the help, the couple we mentioned. Yeah, he did all right, but he didn't get rewarded for it.
I'm not going to complain about that. I feel good. I spread the wealth out.
I got negative 15 for Children of the Forest. I guess there was a significant change in their look.
I think the writer said that she looks like Battlestar Galactica now.
Babylon 5.
Oh, that's the same difference.
Okay, but like...
some nerd shit either way, right?
Hey, back in season 4, I think they were cast by an actual child, which seemed, I guess, a little cooler in retrospect. And now it looks like an adult, like a small adult who's just been dressed up and got a lot of makeup on.
Yeah,
she looks like...
I think it's funny. My dragons got points for status upgrade, but Ramsay didn't.
Oh, what are you gonna do?
Well, at least they're not chained.
Wildlings got me a status update.
They did.
And the three-eyed raven got me some points for looks.
That's right, because he went from being a bird
points
for a new character, but she decided to scrap that because she thought the new one looked cool.
And it's Max von Sydow. Can't go wrong there. So if she likes the actor that's been replaced, then you'll win points. But if she doesn't...
I think replacing a bird with any actor would have probably awarded points.
Well, I mean, how likable was that bird, I think, is the question.
Yeah. Well, how fast can Max von whatever fly 500 miles? Probably not 50 miles an hour.
The point is, we're never going to get inside this Emily Yoshida's head, and she's just going to string us along as the season goes. It's fun. That's what I most look forward to reading on Monday after a Game of Thrones episode, is to see how she allotted points. And this stupid, stupid game continues to rope me in.
I'm learning how to draft fantasy stuff. Shane spends a lot of time doing fantasy sports, and now I'm a tiny bit...
nerd.
any final thoughts on this episode? I think we pretty much talked it out.
Yeah.
Setting the table. We'll see what happens. I'm still excited.
I'm still most interested for Bran myself. So those flashbacks I think the most interesting thing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everyone's pretty ready and excited for the Tower of Joy, so...
Yeah, it'll be a cool scene.
It's almost like Dr. Gann's dreams coming alive with the Three-Eyed Raven. He's like, you know, have you ever sat in the moon and just looked down in Westeros?
Some inside baseball for all those U of E history majors. Well, neither do our hundreds of listeners, Blair.
I don't know what he's talking about either.
All right, see, there you go.
I know what he's talking about. It made me smile.
I'm totally with you. It's a solid Irish brogue. And that was not one. So I think we're going to end on a high note and say goodnight. We'll be back next week with episode 53 entitled Oathbreaker. Which I don't know. I don't know who that will refer to. Maybe Alistair Thorne, maybe Ramsay. I don't know. I have no idea.
Well, Brienne has a sword called Oathkeeper.
That is the name of Brienne's sword, yes. And it's Oathkeeper. I have an idea of where that could refer to, but it seems too early for what I'm thinking of. We know that they're going to spend some time in the Riverlands at some point. But now seems way too early. They haven't laid any pipe for that. Whatever. We've got an episode of Deadwood that'll be coming out shortly, I presume.
That should be out tomorrow.
Okay.
The same day this is out.
That was an excellent episode. We got in deep on American history and blowjob monologues and Richardson, the chef, that's giving him way too much credit. Richardson, the slop cook. that was a good episode. Look forward to that in the next coming days. We're discussing The Princess Bride on MediocreMovie.club.
I was happy to see you gave it a positive grade.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not gonna go. I couldn't go crazy for that movie, but I respect it as a script more than anything.
Knowing your track record on 80s movies, it's a win for all of us Princess Bride fans.
All right. I'm glad to hear it. We'll see if Drew feels the same way. He hasn't replied to my review yet. I'm sure he doesn't. I'm sure he doesn't. I have more questions about the Princess Bride.
Your B grade is personal toward him, and you know it.
Kissel. Yeah.
Kissel.
What's up, Phil?
Did you mention how that movie shits on the Bechdel test?
I don't think I did.
It absolutely does.
There's like two female characters, and one is under bad, heavy makeup.
And so. The other is not even given a name.
Is Buttercup not her name?
Is that anyone's name?
It is. Buttercup.
Isn't that a stripper name?
you're forgetting the Queen as the third female character.
That's her name. I don't remember that at all.
In the lady who boos at her dream as the fourth.
Oh yeah. Okay. So there's heavy makeup, there's stripper name, and there's booing person. And the point is moot because they never talk to each other. So it's still a Bechdel fail.
They do. Buttercup and the booing lady talk to each other, right. And it's,
but they talk about Wesley.
That's true. The point is, it's got some lady troubles in the Princess Bride.
Does anyone else want to shit on John's point?
What?
I said, does anyone else want to shit on John's point?
Follow this scintillating discussion at mediocommunity.club. We'll shortly be discussing The World of Tomorrow, or not The World of Tomorrow, just World of Tomorrow, Don Hertzfeldt's highly acclaimed short, courtesy of Shane, that'll be going up next week. Yeah. And it's a busy time. Check us out at MediocreMovie.club. Follow us on Twitter, MediocreMovieCole. Couldn't get the U or the B in there. That's how we do. Review us on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. We deserve each and every one of them.
If you've listened this long, give yourself 5 stars.
Yeah, you're a 5-star person. We're a 5-star podcast. 5 stars everywhere. Thanks for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Good night. War of the masses, the outcome disastrous. Many of the victim families saved their ashes. A million names on walls engraved in plaques. Those who went back received penalties for their acts. Another heart is torn, as close ones mourn. Those who strayed, niggas get slayed.